Well, back here on SportsCenter, we're following a significant developing story tonight. Major League Baseball announced today that it's moving this summer's All-Star Game out of Atlanta in response to a new Georgia law that has civil rights groups concerned about its potential to restrict voting access for people of color.
If you were looking for a story about sports and democracy and race and money, this has been the news cycle for you. And it may seem like it all hinges on this new voting law just passed in Georgia, which is now engulfing Major League Baseball and the Masters in Augusta. But the real story goes a lot deeper. Today, Howard Bryant breaks down what's actually happening and how baseball's calculated decision echoed across Georgia, across sports, and beyond. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, April 8th. This is ESPN Daily. Howard Bryant, the Masters Golf Tournament starts today in Augusta, Georgia. It is one of sport's most premier events, an enormous platform. But the energy all leading into it has changed pretty dramatically because of what's happened with baseball and Georgia in recent days. MLB moved the All-Star Game out of Georgia because of the new legislation the state passed that makes it harder to vote. So first, I just need you to tell me about this Georgia law. What does it do?
What this law really, SB 202, what it really is all about is the ways to keep the traditional high numbers of African-American voters down.
Howard Bryant is a senior writer for ESPN and the author of the Henry Hank Aaron biography, The Last Hero.
When you look at what this law potentially allows the Georgia legislature to do, that it takes over from the Secretary of State an election, it allows individual members of the board to be dropped if they're unpopular at the governor's or the Secretary of State's behest. If you can do those things, then you can essentially overturn an election, which is essentially what this whole thing was about back in November. And so these details of that bill aren't getting anywhere near the attention that they deserve. If these laws were in place last November, then the road had been paved to give President Trump specifically what he wanted, which was the avenue to overturn an election based on fraud that had not been proven. That's what this whole thing is really about.
And that road that you just alluded to, Howard, it goes from November and it seems to run right through January 6th. It seems that that day at the U.S. Capitol in particular is inextricable from this.
Well, it's kryptonite. What I really believe drove this was the fact that Major League Baseball does not want to be associated with the 2020 election, January 6th, the runoff, or SB 2020. And neither do their corporate partners. They don't need the headache. They don't need the grief. They don't need the optics. They don't need any of this. They don't need 10 years from now, somebody saying, the year Hank Aaron died and the year that this heinous voter law was passed, you still held the All-Star Game in Atlanta. You didn't do anything.
Hank Aaron, of course, the legend who played for the Braves, the man who lived in Atlanta most of his life, this towering figure, Howard, in American history and Black history. And it is hard to see honoring him in Georgia if this is the backdrop, this new voter law.
Rob Manfred doesn't need that. Baseball doesn't need that. This was not a player-driven thing, unlike the NBA. It's not an 80% Black league in Major League Baseball. So what you really had here was the corporate powers that be at Major League Baseball recognizing this is a bad deal for us. Brian Kemp is not worth this. We shouldn't be part of this. And if we can take a little short-term criticism to avoid a long-term headache, let's do it. Let's go to Colorado.
Yeah, Brian Kemp being the governor of Georgia that Rob Manfred is now at loggerheads with in public, it would seem. And when Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Howard, made his statement, it did have the ring of strength. It was about MLB support of voting rights.
Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred said in a statement, quote, Major League Baseball fundamentally supports voting rights for all Americans and opposes restrictions to the ballot box, unquote.
But as you allude to, this is more about the threading of an economic needle here. What were the different factions and concerns that Rob Manfred was making this calculation about here?
Yeah, it's the threading of an economic needle, but it's also the threading of the larger question of who are you as Major League Baseball? Let's not forget that last year after George Floyd was killed, Major League Baseball made a big deal out of suggesting that they were in support of African-American rights. They made a big deal about acknowledging the fact that they had been sitting on the sidelines during Ferguson and Freddie Gray and the rest of that stuff. So they did all of those things. Major League Baseball also went out of its way last year to take the statistics from the Negro Leagues and incorporate them into the historical record. So baseball is trying to be, at least optics-wise, on the right side of this. And then you're going to take that and undermine everything by riding with this bill? It was just a lose-lose for them. There was no way that they were going to be able to have that game there and not get absolutely castigated. They just couldn't do that.
And if you're Rob Manfred, Howard, I have to imagine that Rob Manfred probably feels, and not to mix cinematic metaphors here, but he probably kind of feels like Plymouth Rock landed on him. I don't think he went and tried to chase political principle here. It feels like he was cornered in some sense.
Rob Manfred has been in many a labor battle. He's a labor lawyer. He knows a winner when he sees a winner, and he knows a loser when he sees a loser. And for Major League Baseball, this was just going to be a political loser. You can't win them all on this one. We'll take a 3 or 4 month hit until the All-Star game is played, and then things will go on. Now, the folks who are in a really interesting place are the Braves, because now you've got the state railing against Major League Baseball, and the Braves are like, hey, this wasn't our call. You want to boycott us? So it's almost like a circular firing squad right now.
Stacey Abrams, Howard, the now powerful Georgia Democrat, gubernatorial candidate, and voting rights activist, she said that she does not support an economic boycott of Georgia because it'll hurt vulnerable families. What could they have done? What were the options in front of Rob Manfred, Commissioner of Baseball, Howard, with all of the power that he has? What could he have done if not move the game out of Atlanta, out of Georgia?
Before we get into this, let's also stop saying that that the game is being played in Atlanta. The Braves play in Cobb County. The Braves moved outside of the city for the first time since 1966, since their arrival. But anyway, it is very, very true, nevertheless, that Black or white, Latino or Asian, the Uber drivers and the Lyft drivers and the hotel folks and the small businesses, the restaurants, the bars, everybody who benefits from a big event coming to town, all those people were going to lose. And so what Major League Baseball could have done was to say, look, we're going to keep the game here for them. We have a massive political action committee, and we're going to target the people who made this bill into law. And we're going to do the same thing that the Atlanta Dream did. We're going to target those politicians, and we may support candidates who run against them. But they didn't do that. They could have been far more devastating to that state by saying, look, we are not going to view you in any way as part of the solution here. You guys are against voting rights, and each one of you guys who voted for this bill, we're going to primary you, or we're going to support other people because we don't want a state where one of our franchises is based to behave like this. They could have done that, and they chose not to. Rob Manfred went on ESPN on Thursday and said that the game was still going to be played, and then the next day he moved it. So clearly there was a calculation, there was a movement that took place between last Thursday and last Friday that shifted the entire story. And so it's important for us to remember that Major League Baseball did what was best for Major League Baseball. And for me, this is one of those examples of where doing the right thing and doing what was right for business happened to align. But I don't think the two had to align.
Well, about the power of the purse on that, Howard, when it seems like the solution that baseball arrived at was Colorado, how did that strike you? Because the common critique now, all of it politically charged, of course, is that, look, you moved it from this place that had X percent Black population, 51% in Atlanta, although, again, the game wasn't literally in Atlanta anymore, to Denver, a city with 9.1% Black population. How much does that matter to you?
It doesn't matter at all. What it tells you is that the narrative is wrong. It tells you it's got nothing to do with Black people. It has to do with baseball not wanting to be associated with an insurrection. You know, let's stay on target here. You know how many baseball decisions would be different if caring about Black people were the first priority? I mean, this is something that they're like, we don't need the grief, man. And here's the other piece of it. If we're going to go back and give ourselves a history lesson, let's also not forget that the only reason that the Atlanta Braves are in Atlanta is because the city relented on segregated seating at Fulton County Stadium. Mm. For the Milwaukee Braves, as a condition of them moving to Atlanta, they had to agree. They were forced. They had to agree that the seating at Fulton County Stadium was going to be integrated. No colored bleachers, no colored entrances, no colored water fountains. All that stuff had to go at the ballpark. And so it's not as though we haven't seen sports apply political pressure to a region. And it's also not as though Atlanta doesn't know this, because the reason why Atlanta is Atlanta is because they saw economically what segregation and what Jim Crow was doing to Memphis and Nashville and Birmingham. Birmingham was a bigger city than Atlanta in terms of railroad and commerce for an early part of the 20th century. And all those cities in the Deep South got wiped out because they refused to let go of segregation. So Atlanta knows this. It's a history story. It's also a civics lesson.
All right, Howard, after the break, I want to continue this story, this history, this civics lesson by turning the car towards Augusta National.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Howard, the Masters is teeing off today, this morning, and they are now in this too, because MLB's decision to move the All-Star game out of Georgia has turned the spotlight now to Augusta National, this wildly exclusive golf club, and their chairman, Fred Ridley, who made this statement on Wednesday.
I believe, as does everyone in our organization, that the right to vote is fundamental in our democratic society. We realize that views and opinions on this law differ, and there have been calls for boycotts and other punitive measures. Unfortunately, those actions often impose the greatest burdens on the most vulnerable in our society.
So, Howard, it feels important to consider Augusta's history here. They have famous, infamous, long-standing issues around race and gender discrimination. They didn't have black members until 1990. They had exclusively black caddies for decades before that. Women couldn't be members until 2012. This, in general, is not a history or a reality that Augusta necessarily likes to engage with. What did you make of the statement from Fred Ridley on Wednesday?
I didn't make anything of it. I thought that this was precisely who they are. I think it's difficult for people to understand that so much of what you see in your culture is not by accident. And it's one of the things that when you deal with racism and sexism and all of these other things, people have so much outrage about, oh my God, I can't believe that somebody thinks like that. Why can't you believe it? Mm. It's been around you your whole life. This isn't some sort of anomaly. And you have to remember too, that so much of what we've talked about in our culture and also in our politics is this idea of public versus private, and that the private industry can do whatever the private industry wants to do. In the case of Major League Baseball, it makes a little bit more sense because at least most ballparks around the country are taxpayer funded. So in some ways it's a private entity, but it's a public infrastructure. Augusta National is private. It's private from top to bottom. And so these are the questions as we begin to dig deeper into the separation of sports from its old mores of simply being entertainment. Now, when you start pulling those layers back, we're all starting to discover that the limits of what sports can do pressure-wise sometimes can be very sobering.
Something sports loves doing, Howard, even more than actually doing stuff, is doing symbolism. It loves doing ceremony. And at Augusta this year, Lee Elder, the first black golfer to ever compete at Augusta, he has the ceremonial role of opening the entire tournament by hitting a drive off the first tee. He is now the first Black golfer to be invited to participate in that tradition. And I want to note that this was decided before the Georgia voting bill was signed into law. But how does all of that land with you now?
Well, that's just what we do, right? I mean, this is the thing with Black people are always magical Negroes, right? That's the trope in the movies, whether it's the Oracle in the Matrix or whether it's Bagger Vance or whatever you want to do, right? Pick one, okay? What's the alternative? If you say no, then people are going to call you bitter and then they're going to turn the news cycle around on you. If you say yes, then some people like me are going to say, well, they're only rolling you out there because they need you. So everybody's stuck in a way. Mm. And the reason why people are stuck is because there's no authenticity. If there's an authenticity there and you actually confront your past and you try to overcome and be different with your past, then you can actually have some level of authenticity.
And the other Black guy who meets that job description of the moment is Cameron Champ. Cameron Champ, Howard, is the only player of Black heritage competing at the Masters this year. He was asked about all of this, of course, and he voiced his disappointment in the law. Although in that sound, you could also hear him feeling stuck himself.
As you can tell, it's, you know, it really targets, you know, certain Black communities and makes it harder for them to vote, which to me is everybody's right to vote. So to see that was very shocking. And obviously with MLB and what they did moving the All-Star game was a big statement. But again, you know, this is a prestigious event and I know there's a lot going on with it and the people involved with it. So, but again, yeah, it was definitely a little bit frustrating to see that. And
these athletes being participants in now the rhythms of the cycle, how we deal with controversies in sports. We have the leagues make statements. We have the athletes allegedly being held to some account here. But what really is going on?
Well, what's really going on is it's the same playbook. It's the same wheel. It's once again, you take these players, you isolate them, you put them against a white backdrop, and you expect them to answer all the questions that our ideas about race in this country have always been, ask the Black guy. What are you asking him for? Ask yourselves. Ask the people who make the decisions. Ask the people who voted for the law. Ask those folks. And you might actually even get better answers. It's hard enough playing the games. We cover sports for a living. It's hard enough just to do this. Now you've got to be the official spokesman for Black America when you're the only Black person in that space. You want to talk about being set up to fail. I'm surprised he's going to be able to make a putt, right? It's hard enough to concentrate and do this job.
The overriding unifying theory that I'm sort of getting here about all of this is that it's really hard to take a profit motive out of these decisions. It is really hard for businesses that are capitalist by nature, right? Their mission statement, quite literally, is growth, is profit. And now we turn to them to be these moral compasses. And I just wonder, as we think about how this all spins forward, like a larger recurring question to me is, what should our expectations be for these entities?
Yeah, I think the expectations need to be a bit more adversarial. The businesses themselves put pressure on the states, like the Braves. Well, if you don't give us this lease, we're moving. So there's a political game that's constantly taking place. If you don't build me a stadium, then I'm moving my team to Phoenix or whatever. So it's all in the game in a lot of ways. We've all seen that take place. I think that where it gets more difficult is, once again, in this expectation of the business doing the right thing. The pressure that that occurred here in terms of the Braves was still about money. It was the corporate pressure of, do we need the grief of what's going to take place? These are corporate guys making that decision. I don't think they may have thought there was going to be some Al Sharpton, Stacey Abrams, LeBron James type of boycott. But from what I had heard and from what my sourcing had told me, that the Players Alliance, the African-American led players, you know, social justice coalition in baseball, they were playing no matter where the game was played. So these decisions were being made at a corporate level even before it got to the field.
So I just want to have you address a popular critique, Howard, here, because so often, year after year, again and again, but in this news cycle in particular, we hear lamentations about how politics has contaminated sports. How now we're dealing with this and not the games that real sports fans love. When you hear that for the umpteenth time, what do you think about?
I just say, tell that to Jackie Robinson. Tell that to the 1980 Olympic team and the 1984 Olympic teams in Russia that, you know, the Americans boycotted one, the Russians boycotted the other. Politics are throughout all of this, and it's a naive thing to say. And it's also, it's a luxury. It's the first world problem that I'm glad that this doesn't mess up your entertainment. But if you're the black player in the 1950s who had to go stay in segregated housing because you weren't allowed to be with your teammates, well, this has been going on for a very, very long time. And I would also say, if you don't want sports in your politics and politics in your sports, what have you been watching in America post 9/11? What on earth is that American flag doing in the middle of the football field if you don't want this?
Howard Bryant, I appreciate you taking me on a tour through American history that I don't think is going to end anytime soon.
No, thank you. It's good being here. There'll be plenty of other things to talk about. That's my prediction.
All right, coming up, a global but very personal story about the most delicious sandwich in sports.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. The pimento cheese sandwich is a simple but beautifully particular innovation. It is a spread of very non-fancy cheese and a lot of mayonnaise and red pimento chili peppers, all mixed in and then slathered across the whitest of white breads. It is sweet, but spicy, and light, but artery-clogging. And it's also the signature menu item at the Masters, where it is famously priced at $1.50. It's beloved throughout pretty much the entire American South, which was shocking for me to personally learn several years ago, because until I learned about its place in Southern culture, I'd honestly thought that this beautifully particular innovation was actually just Filipino. See, my family is from the Philippines, and I tasted this perfect sandwich in question on the very first trip I ever took there. Everyone in Manila calls it cheese pimiento, never pimento cheese, like they say in Georgia. And my aunt and uncle serve cheese pimiento to us kids for merienda, afternoon snack. And it is no exaggeration to say that I fell in love. But you should know that I am far from the only Filipino person who worships this specific sandwich. Virtually the entire Philippines does. Just go on YouTube for a second and look up how many Filipinos have posted cheese pimiento cooking videos.
Okay, today we will make a homemade cheese pimiento. Preheat the saucepan and melt natin ang butter, including also the evaporada and the pimientos. Ang pimientos natin, binablanch lang yan ng ilang minuto sa kumlong tubig.
No, these recipes are not identical to Augusta's secretive and heavily redacted formula. In fact, it turns out that the Philippines loves pimento cheese in the same exact way the country has embraced basketball and Spam and the English language itself. Passionately and idiosyncratically, and ultimately, unsurprisingly. Because the Philippines was an American colony for 48 years, from 1898 to 1946. And at one point, President William McKinley vowed to civilize the Filipino people, a profoundly pernicious concept that seeped into every nook and cranny of the culture. And then the U.S. turned the country into its foothold in the Pacific theater, filling military bases with legions of American soldiers who came over from the South and inevitably shared her recipes. That loaded collision is how a nation 9,000 miles away from Augusta wound up in the cult of what turns out to be golf's most iconic sandwich. And it is also why I am so hungry right now. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.